Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic. Member of the West Side Men's Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's great to be here with you guys tonight. Tonight, we're going to do steps 6 and 7. And it's going to be bold. We're going to cover a lot of ground tonight. And for me, step 6 is where everything changed for me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it's amazing the fact that in the big book of AA, that it only mentions step 6 in a paragraph. I think it's really, it's like the Harry Potter series. There's like a ring behind a ring, and you have to open up a special door, and then that door comes up, and then there's where the secret is. And they kind of hide step 6, I think, because, well, either they don't know where they don't know how much power it is, because they're writing the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when Bill W. has, Bill W. has 4 years, between 4 and 5 years, from 1935 to 1939, they're writing the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So maybe they don't know the power that it has behind it yet, or maybe they realize that if they spend too much time on it, then maybe people won't get it. But in the 15 years later, after they've seen some of the people that said they have recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, the same people that wrote, some of the same people that wrote that we are of 100 that have recovered, and those that have recovered, they go back to drinking, they realize that some of the people that said they were recovered, they're not actually recovered. That maybe it's actually recovery. That it's actually a daily thing. And that's why when you mentioned the thing about yeast, I took a look at the yeast that's going on in my life today. And if you're here for the first time, you might say, what are they talking about? Doing a searching and fearless moral inventory on a daily basis. Now, the step 4 is not really what we're talking about, but searching out what needs to be removed from our lives and then giving it to God, telling another human being usually, and then giving it to God is a 4, 5, 6, and 7 process, for me anyway. There are certain things that God took from me in the very beginning. You know, day 1, got down on my knees. I said, God, please take away this addiction from me. Please take away my desire to use drugs and alcohol. And from day 1, he took that. I do have to say that. Now, I'm going to tell you that it wasn't easy this time around. This is my second time in sobriety. My first time that I had 7 years, it was really easy. I mean, I prayed to God for him to remove my addiction. I never thought about cocaine ever again. That was what I came in for. And he took it, boom, took it. And sometimes I think what happens is when things go that easy, like I know people that when they diet, dieting is the issue for me. For the next 6 weeks, you're going to be hearing about dieting. I know people that when they diet, they can like fast for a week. It's no big deal for them. They just say, listen, I'm going to be fasting. I go, well, what does that mean? They're like, I'm not going to eat from now till next Tuesday. And when they say that kind of stuff, it blows my mind. Fasting for me is what I do from midnight to 6 a.m. And then at 6 a.m. I break that fast with breakfast. That's as close as I've been getting this year. And so when those people that it's no big deal for them, sometimes I see that they take it very cavalier. But those of us that it's a big deal to, when we give up food, like when I gave up food last year in anticipation of God blessing us with a son, I gave up a certain type of food for 21 days. And when I gave that, I gave up all this specific type of foods for 21 days. It was a big deal for me. I only ate fruits and vegetables. It was not like, oh no, it's no big deal. It was a big deal. Now, you're not supposed to tell anybody it's a big deal. So while I was pretending it wasn't a big deal, I'm thinking, but it's a big deal. That's what I'm thinking the whole time. So that's the same thing about this time around my sobriety. God did take away the desire for me to use the drugs and alcohol. However, it was not easy. He came alongside me and helped me with it, but I was thinking about it for a long time. Last time around, I did one prayer, didn't think about it for 7 years. This time around, I did one prayer and he came alongside me and helped me one day at a time, but I did think about it. I did think about it when I saw billboard ads. I did think about it when all my friends continue to go out, even this week. Some of my closest friends continue to go out. I did think about it. Was it an obsession? No, it was not an obsession. But it's been work this time for me. The last 10.5 years has been work. Not to stay sober. I don't want to mislead you. I don't want to say that it's been work like that. But it has not been smooth sailing. It's been a constant. You know what? Today, Lord, today is the 3rd of April. I'm going to surrender this, this, and this, and this. And this is what I want to talk to you about tonight. In step 6. Step 6 is not, in my interpretation, step 6 is not, we have these defects, we say to God, take them, we're entirely ready to take them, and he just takes them. And then we become white as snow. It's amazing. We just, you know, we confess our sins in step 5. And this morning I was in a meeting at 8:30 in the morning with Greg, and I saw that people were upset when someone else in the meeting was using the word sins. Don't have to be upset when they use the word sins. Or defects of character, whatever the word is that you call it, because it's in page 12 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything that's in the big book, in the first 164 pages, is the program of AA. So when he says on page 12 that to have God remove my sins from me root and branch, he means exactly that. Now you might want to call them character defects. I do that often. I spoke to you last week about pagels, pride, envy, greed, gluttony, lust, and sloth. I spoke to you about those last week. And we want God to take those from him. Sometimes you want to just call it the three-letter word sins, you call it what you want. What I do know is that whenever I have those things in my life, they usually bring about pain. They usually bring about, at least they bring about a discomfort. So I was thinking today that my first time around the program, I did a step 5 with a sponsor that I knew was not going to judge me harshly. Let me tell you what I mean by that. This time around, my sponsor, I knew he was going to be serious with me. And I would never want a sponsor that was going to tell me what I wanted to hear. So the people that I surround myself with, which one of them, which is Marty, they're not yes men. Okay? I think if you have a group of yes men and women around you, it's time to get yourself a new support group. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be your friends. They could be your friends. You can have a big cheering section of yes men and women for your friends, but really I don't believe they can be your support group. I want them to be the first line of defense to say, you know what, you're acting like a wacko. I want those people to have the first line of defense in my life. I want them to have that authority, and I want them to have that power to speak into my life. So I do surround myself with men that I've given both those things. Joshua is one of them. He can say, Steve, your talk tonight was full of ego. And because I follow another book, which is the Bible, and it says only a fool does not accept correction, I listen. Now, I'm not always going to accept it as the entire truth, but I listen and I take what I want. And this I'm going to show you something tonight so that you can see what I mean by that. So in step 6, I did this step 5 with a sponsor that I believed that he wasn't going to be too harsh with me. I told him these defects of character that I had. I shared my story with him. But I knew that this sponsor was also living with some of those same defects of character. I knew that when it came to the sexual stuff, he wasn't going to judge me harshly because he was as big as he was a bigger guy. He was doing the same things I was doing. So when I picked a guy that was as sick as me in the room, I'm like, that guy is as sick as me, and I'm going to have him be my sponsor. So when it came to the fifth step, he really couldn't speak into my life in the fifth step the way that a sponsor is supposed to, because I know he had been still living in that type of sin or that type of defect of character. And so I chose the easier, softer way. So when I came to the place where, and I still like to do that, and I looked over at him, he's like, it's understandable, and I knew I was set. And I moved on. So when it came to step 6 and 7, I did exactly like the big book said. I glanced over it. Now, that's what I thought the big book said. I thought because it was 2 paragraphs that it was just you take the book off the shelf, you look at the 2 paragraphs, you say some stuff to yourself, you've just done a bunch of work in step 4, you wrote down a bunch of stuff, you went through a thorough house cleaning with a sponsor, and now step 6 and 7 was kind of a give you. It's like, whew, you just do it like in one night. And I could not have been any more wrong. And this is what I want to share with you. I want to share with you that I have very, very close personal friends. As a matter of fact, members of this group, or people that are not members of the group, people that have come to this group since I started this step series, that are drinking tonight because they not have the ability to work a step 6 and 7. Because eventually, the insides will match the outsides. and the outsides will match the insides. And if you're staying clean and living dirty, that'll eventually wash into the same person. Now, you don't have to take my word on that. But let me tell you, when I started to live dirty in my fourth year of sobriety, by the time my seventh year of sobriety came, it was just a little hop, skip, and a jump. Nick's roommate said to me today when I was speaking to him about how is it possible that one of our friends went out again. He said, well, he was been living this way in sobriety, and so when he went to go reach for the Pepsi, it was just like the difference between Pepsi and Coke. It was not a big deal. But those of us that are living a good, clean in life, it would be like very, very different. It'd be like we drink water every day, then we reach for a Pepsi. It's a big difference between water and Pepsi. But if you're living dirty, it's not that big of a jump. So I was already living dirty. I never really did a 6 and 7, the real 6 and 7. And so, you know, I didn't think it was that bad to go to gentlemen's clubs. I don't know if you've ever heard of a gentleman's club. I thought that's where gentlemen go in sobriety. I didn't think that it was a bad thing to spend one of my nights instead of going to a meeting. I would go over to the casino. Back then, it wasn't a casino. It was a hi-li. It was pre-casino. I would hang out at the hi-li and smoke cigars and act like a big shot and think I was a big shot and do all that kind of stuff. So when I finally had the desire to take a drink, it was not a big jump. It was more like a sidestep. This time around, I really believe in the step 6 and 7. Now, what does that mean, what I believe in that? It means I work a step 6 and 7. It means I worked a step 6 and 7 today. It means I'm entirely ready to have God remove my defects of character. What's up, Dave? I'm entirely ready to have him remove my defects of character, and I don't always know what they are. So if you don't always know what they are, how could you be entirely ready? How could you even make that statement? Well, you have these things, we call these things principles, the principles. It says, practice these principles in all our affairs. And then there's these principles that people say that are behind the steps. You've heard of that? The principles behind the steps. Is anybody, am I the only, Mark, you've heard of this? Am I the only person that heard the principles behind the steps? Like the principle behind step one is what? Honesty. You've heard that, right? Well, I want to tell you something. This is not published. This is not like there's a set of principles that AA Intergroup office puts out, a set of principles like the principles pamphlet. That is not how it works. This is a set of principles that over the years, those people that are picking up long term and here picking up 35, 40 years, 50 years, they've been talking about these principles that they have developed as the result of working these steps. And the direct opposite of our character defects comes these principles. So as we're character defect of dishonesty, and people work step one, they say, you know what, the principle behind that is probably honesty. And as this continues to go on and continues to go on, these people continue to practice these principles in all their affairs. They've passed that tradition on to us. So when something's bothering me, when something's inside me, and I feel that there's something not going right, and I'm supposed to be happy, joyous, and free, it's very possible that one of my own instincts has gone astray. Now that's the behind the scenes. Now let me do a little reading. There's an incredible book. I don't know if it's conference approved though, so I can't. Well, you know what? It's not conference disapproved. So there's this incredible book called Drop the Rock. Okay? And if you're in the program and you don't have Drop the Rock, this is a great time for you to go and Kindle it or Google it or whatever you do and get the edition in print or in digital and get Drop the Rock. Because this is just a great book that comes around the side of you and helps you and supports you in your walk with step 6 and 7. And I brought some stuff here from that, I think. But one of the things that it talks about in Dropping the Rock is they do this illustration of this woman and there's this group members and they go to this lake. And all these group members are in this lake and they're swimming around and they're happy, joyous, and free and they're on the shore and everybody's. But there's this one woman named Mary and she's having a real hard time swimming. She's going up, she's falling. She's going up and she's falling. And the people along the shore that's already worked this part of the program, they're shouting over to her, Mary, drop the rock. And she says, but I can't drop the rock. She doesn't feel she can drop the rock because those are her defects of character. You see, the crazy thing about it is, we've been with our defects of character so long, we think it's part of our life. You know, it's very easy to see that drinking gets in the way of our life. It's very easy to see that we have this first step, we do the first step, we write down all our things. It's very, very easy to see. But when it comes to defects of character, it's a little bit harder to see Because we don't ask you how many days you got away from looking at pornography, or how many days you got from cheating, or how many days you got away from lying, or are you paying your taxes? We can't do your inventory from the podium. We just assume that when a person comes up and they say they have 25 years, that they're working the principles in all their affairs. But that's not the case. Practicing these principles in all your affairs is an internal job, and we can't see it from here. Sometimes you can. You see a person, I remember there's a girl here a couple weeks ago that came here, and she supposedly had long-term sobriety. She looks like she got run over by a truck. So she was miserable. Now, I'm not sure she's practicing principles in all her affairs, but she certainly didn't look like it in her face. And that happens in all different meetings. We see these people that are these men, they're sitting in the meetings and they're trying to 13-step girls that are coming in from the halfway houses. They're miserable. They have these mean faces, wrinkles on their eyes, horns coming out of their head. I don't think they're practicing these principles. They may be, but I'm not really sure. So why did I bring up those two illustrations? To shock you? No. Because defects of character is an internal job. Defects of character is something, in my case, that will get us drunk. But in other people's cases, will at least get you miserable. And because I'm not going to be in this program of AA if I'm miserable, what it does for me is it brings me out to the edges of AA. And when I'm out in the edges of AA, that's where I can be picked off. If I'm not enjoying myself in AA, let me tell you. Well, if I'm not enjoying myself in a meeting, I switch meetings. If I'm not enjoying myself in that meeting, I switch another meeting. Because there's so many amazing meetings around. I'm not going to be sitting in meetings where people are miserable. Or they're talking about just hanging on. Or, well, at least I'm staying sober. Or all that nonsense. That's not in the big book. I like to go to meetings like this one where they're talking about the fourth dimension of existence. And happy, joyous, and free. And living a life beyond our wildest dreams. And how much God has given us and what we can pack into the stream of life. And all those are the type of meetings that I like to go to. And I start off during the week with a meeting schedule. And by the end of the week, I'm usually hitting three or four of those type of meetings. Then there's a couple obligatory meetings. And I enjoy my home group with my guys. And that's a great meeting for men. And then we have a good meeting over at the Cleveland House on Saturday over in Hollywood. And of course, I go to church on Sundays. The big book says that many of us will turn to the religion of our youth. I've returned to the religion of someone's youth. It's not my specific youth, but I've returned to someone's religion. I've been sampling all different things. I'm having a great time with it. And I just want to enjoy myself. I want to enjoy myself. I don't want to have closed-mindedness when it comes to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't get sober and the Lord didn't allow me to come out of my closet that I built for myself, that I stayed underneath the stairs for 2 years so that I'd be miserable in AA. I'm not signing up for that program. So let's go to the book. Well, we're going to be in page 63 of the 12 and 12. This is the step. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. This is the step that separates the men from the boys, or the women from the girls. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his fault without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually and therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. That's a powerful paragraph. When was the last time you were in AA and you heard someone say, I'm trying to grow in the image and likeness of my creator? That's not very popular. That almost sounds too religious for our program. And yet it's in a book that's not religious. The 12 and 12 is not a religious book. Let me tell you, this is a handbook for a semi-religious book. But even the 12 and 12 says in step 6, our whole goal is to grow in the image and likeness of our creator. Now, does that mean you're going to grow in the image and likeness of my creator? No, our creator. And that's what's the beautiful thing about it. It talks about our Father, our creator. In step 3 that we spoke about just recently, it talked about he's the Father, we are his children. And I love that. I love those type of phrases that can help me to remember just how limited I am of my own power. And that's in step 6 of the 12 and 12. Now, let's go to the big book on page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. What are the things that we can answer to our satisfaction? The 5 questions about the first 5 steps that we just did, steps 1 through 5. If we can answer that we've done those steps the right way, then what? We can move on to step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Now, we go back to the 12 and 12. What was the one word that they said was indispensable in the 12 and 12? Willingness. Both the books are talking about willingness. That if we don't have willingness to have God remove these defects of character, if we don't have the willingness to be entirely ready, that we're really not going to be able to get the step. And then it goes on to say that if you're not entirely ready, then at least pray for what? The willingness to be entirely ready. And that's really, I think that that's really a lot of magic in that. Because you might be hearing this right now and say, well, I'm not really willing to have my defective character of anger, because that protects me. My neighbor's not being nice to me. I come out of the house. I'm protecting my wife and my family. I'm nasty to my neighbor. That's a protection thing. What all we have to do is have 1 ounce of willingness to pray for the willingness to have God remove that. Now, when we start at those levels, when we start at the micron levels, then, well, everything else can be added on top of that. And some of the things that I've had to do in my own life, because I didn't think there were defects of character. I remember one time I walked into a therapy session in one of our friends' office. I'm in the office, but because I went to therapy, 3 years of therapy. The big book says that some of us need to seek outside help. I needed to seek outside. I could continue to seek outside help, but I had to pay for those therapy sessions. So I'm inside the therapy session, and I'm say to the woman who's my therapist, my wife was out of town. I go and I see her. We were marriage counseling together. I thoroughly believe in marriage counseling, especially if you're having problems in your marriage, as I was. We went and sat down with this woman for 3 years. Now, my wife was out of town in my third year of sobriety. She's out of town. So I go in and I have different issues with this woman, because when you're in front of your wife, you have wife issues and stuff you can say in front of your wife issues, but when your wife's not there, you have other issues. So I tell this doctor that my issues, and in the middle of it, she says, that doesn't sound like to me that that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you know, I'm in the middle of my share right there, so I didn't really like to be interrupted, but this is what happened to me in the middle of that share. This is what I want to share with you. I didn't think what I had was a defect. I'm in there for alcoholism and drug addiction and fist fighting and the major crimes. I'm in there for major crimes. She's talking about minor crimes. I'm telling my wife is out of town. I'm doing some minor crimes. She says to me, excuse me, that doesn't seem like that is practicing your principles and all your affairs. And I'm like, listen, and this is why I share this with you. I'm like, listen, don't step into that realm. That's not why I'm here. That was at 25 minutes into the session. At 50 minutes of the session, I'm already telling her, wow, thank you so much for bringing that out. I didn't even realize I had that. Now, if we're open and willing to have God reveal to us that there's things in our lives that could be blocking us away from the sunlight of the Spirit, then when someone brings something up to us, even in a short realm of 25 minutes, we might want to take a look at it. Now, where in my life where I don't have any growth is when I say, yeah, but. Yeah, but. Now, I was confessing to her a minor crime. She was telling me it was a major crime. I'm saying, no, you don't understand. It's a minor crime. Let me tell you what I used to do. She said, that's fine what you used to do, but you've been 3.5 cleans. It sounds like what you're still doing. When she said that, I didn't get convicted. I got angry. But in 25 minutes, I saw it in a different way. By the end of that session, I realized that one of the things that I thought was a defect of character, one of the things that I thought was my right as a man, turns out it was a defect of character. And what has happened to me over my walk over the last 10 years is a lot of things that I thought was my right as an individual, as a citizen, as a man, as an American, as an Italian American, whatever nonsense that I've come up with in the last, my 44 years of life, a lot of that stuff has been shattered. Because it's been shattered because I have books like this to go to and say, you know what, that's not an asset, that's a defect. And the reason I knew it was a defect because it was enough for me to bring it up. You know, here, let me just share something with you. If you have something going on in you with what's bubbling up and you're even thinking it's a problem, it's probably a problem. It's probably a secondary problem that can lead to a primary problem. And what I mean by primary problem is those things will eventually, for me, for a guy like me, will eventually and can lead me to a drink. And for me to drink is what? To die. I heard someone in the meeting last week say that, another meeting that I went to said, there's nowhere in the big book that says that drinking will kill you, that your defects of character will kill you. I'm not sure what book that was, but to drink for us is to die. And our defects of character will bring us to the place where we can be on the outskirts where a drink will seem like a solution. You all following me? Yeah. Now, watch this. How else do you know some of the defects of character that you might have, that you might not have, that you have, that you might not know you have? Your reaction to things and how you're showing up in life will show you exactly where you're at and what might need to be removed. I'm not going to say what needs to be removed, because in that crew right over there, they're already crossing their arms, they're already ready to walk out. I'm telling you that it may be you might need to have it removed. Let me show you something. Now, as soon as I opened this, or as soon as I took this out, as soon as I brought it out, I haven't even opened it. I have not even opened it. There was people in here that got very uncomfortable. Started saying, "Uh-oh, I know he can't do that. I'm walking out. This is already in your mind. This is a deal breaker." When this kind of stuff happens in your life, this is just one example. You know that you have what? Religious prejudice. Religious prejudice. And that's just one time of that's just one form of prejudice that will bubble up in you, that you know that it's not of God, that needs to be removed, regardless of what has happened. You know, I had recently, in the last couple of years, I grew up in a half, I'm not bringing out the Bible, I just wanted to test you to see where you're at. And I proved my point, people go, whoa. Woo! That was a close call. Mark, did you see that? It was a close call. I almost got thrown out. I grew up in a half-Jewish, half-Italian home, okay, from New York, which means we celebrate Passover and Easter. Sometimes it happened on the same week. Like this week, it would happen on the same week. Very confusing. You're praising the Lord one day, passing the matzah on the next day. So it's a confusing way to be brought up. I'm sure I'm not the only person in here that got brought up in both religions. The reason I brought that up is, up until recently, I hadn't went to a lot of Jewish traditions. My family then, my mother was the Italian, so she was she took over, and so we went in that direction. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I had a friend say to me, "Would you like to come to Passover at my house?" Because my last name is Jewish, and my last name is Boyarsky, and he assumed I was Jewish. And I know a lot about the Jewish religion growing up in a half-Jewish, half-Italian home. So he said to me, "Would you like to come to Passover in my house?" Now, I hadn't celebrated Passover since I was a little kid. And we were really like gefilte fish Jews. We didn't really like do a lot of the Jewish traditions. We just like did like hide the matzah and then give yourself money. We didn't really know a lot of the stuff. So not like we really know what we were doing. But he said to me, "Would you like to come over to my house for Passover?" Now, this guy's from Israel. I mean, it's going to be serious. It's going to be in Hebrew. We're going to be wearing yarmulkes. I'm now sober. There's not going to be manischewitz. It's not going to be, you know, it's going to be a whole different type of Passover. And the first words out of my mouth were, "Absolutely. I want to be able to experience everything God has to offer." And you know, that was one of the most wonderful, special experiences for my wife and I. We went to there. We experienced that evening over at his house. He then invited us to when his baby was born, and they have this tradition that's amazing. And the rabbi there prayed over us and prayed that we would have a baby someday. And I think, and Joshua agrees with me on this, I think the open-mindedness that we get to have by being in Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing, and yet some of us, when we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, that we only want to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, only. And I think Alcoholics Anonymous, for me, is the jumping-off point for everything else in my life. As long as I have my base in AA, as long as I have my service in AA, as long as I'm working, you know, 3, 6, 1, 12, as long as I'm working the 12 steps, then I can do everything else. Let's come back to the book. Last thing I want to share with you on this is this. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. We are now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable. Now, where did we admit them? In step 5. In step five, we don't know we're admitting that they're objectionable. We think that we're doing an inventory over our life. We don't know that this is going to be now the thing that our sponsor and our guide uses for the rest of our steps. So we kind of like write it and think that we're going to be able to burn it. And I want to tell you that my sponsor, he burned mine. And I don't really think that's a great way to go about it because, I mean, he did have a very good memory. He kept bringing stuff up. Yeah. But he said, okay, now we're going to burn it. It's a little bit harder if your sponsor's not this one of these guys that has this memory that memorizes everything, because when you come to step 8 and 9 and you have to go back to your fourth step to see the people you need to make amends to and you've burned it, then you just have to go by memory. And mine was not any worse than any of you guys in here, not any better. It's just, it's our life. You know what I mean? How much worse can it be, or how much better can it be? So did it need to be burned? I don't know. He did it. But that's not something I would recommend. So we have these lists of defects that our sponsor has pointed out that maybe we need to let this go. Maybe we need to let this go. I shared with you last week that as I thought my fifth step was done, and I was walking away from my fifth step, which fifth step is like a confession. You confess it. I confess my things that I did. There was this one thing that I was still doing. Not like in the past. You know, when you do your fifth step, you're hoping that the stuff, you have some time away from the stuff that you're confessing to the time you did it, right? That your hope. That's why a lot of us, you don't understand what I'm saying? The reason a lot of people drag their feet in the fourth step is because they're still participating in some of that behavior when they're writing the fourth step. And they want to get some time away from that behavior. Here I am sharing my fifth step with my sponsor, and my sponsor says to me, wow, that was something that, thank God that you're over that. Now, I'm sharing it in present life, you know what I mean? I'm not saying that this is the way it used to be when I was drinking. I'm sharing it with my sponsor like, this is what I'm still doing. And my sponsor says, hold on. Drop the chair. This is something you're still doing? We don't act like that in AA. And he was bold enough to say, that's not the way we act in AA. Now, I didn't know that. I figured if it wasn't drinking, because that's the kind of AA that I had been hanging around. The men's group that I used to go to before the West Side Men's Group, kind of like, it was like the Wild West. I mean, the only thing you had to do was check your guns in the meeting. It was like the Wild West. They're like, we're not drinking. So I thought that was what men's sobriety was. So I go start telling my sponsor about the way that I'm living, not the way that I lived. And he says to me, that's not the way we live in AA. And I thought to myself, but that's not about drinking. He said it has everything to do with drinking. You see, when it says that we admit it to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the reason the other human being is so important is because we don't always know what we got. If you tell me I got a tail, and she tells me I have a tail, and you tell me I have a tail, it's probably I have a tail. But if I look back right now, I don't think I got a tail. And my sponsor was like, you got a tail. A couple of them. And they better be removed. So I shared that with him. And then he did something that was amazing. See, I had the most amazing men in my life. His name was Jerry Bear. And then when I sobered up again down here in South Florida, I got another man by the name of Russell Spatz. And Jerry Bear shared with me that although that he did not follow the same faith that I follow, because Jerry Bear is Jewish and I'm Christian, that he respected, that I respected the power of the cross. Now, he didn't respect the power of the cross. He respected that I respected it. And that was really amazing to me. What I mean by this is this. I went to this mountain retreat with him, and there was a gigantic cross on the top of the hill. It happened to be it was a Christian retreat house. I couldn't think of the name. Out in San Francisco. Now, my sponsor, he teaches in yeshiva, so he's like very Jewish. He like gets the whole thing. But he gets for me that this cross is really powerful. So he says to me, I want to take you up to the cross. Now, when he said that, I didn't know exactly what was going on because it was on the side of the mountain and you never know what to expect, you know, because it was like just a couple months after I told him I was still acting in this behavior. So he takes me up there and he tells me to kneel down. And he says, kneel down in front of the cross. Now, understand something. This is not a religious statement. It could have been a rock for him. It didn't mean anything to him. He knew it meant something to me. And I got down and I kneeled in front of the cross. And he said, now I want you to start talking about these things that you would like to have God remove from your life. And he said, and I want you to start with the defects of character that we went over, the pride, the envy, the lust, the sloth, the greed, and those, I don't know why I can't think of the pagels tonight, pride, anger, gluttony, greed, envy, lust, and sloth. I probably was forgetting one of them out like every time because I'm probably trying to hide it. But it probably has to do with my food because I'm in a new diet. Did I mention not gluttony before? I probably didn't mention gluttony three times. I don't want to admit what's going on behind the scenes. And he asked me to get down on my knees. And then he taught me the seventh-step prayer. And when he taught me that seventh-step prayer, and he told me to repeat after him so that I wouldn't get caught up in the words, but I could just understand the meaning, and he said to me, and I'm just going to read it. He said, I want you to repeat after me, my Creator, I'm now willing that you would have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Wow. Grant me the strength to go out and do your bidding. Amen. And when he said that to me, I got it. I really got it. I got that the sixth and seventh step was not an exercise. This was going to be the beginning of the rest of my life. This was going to be the reason that this is the difference between the men and the boys and the women and the girls is because those of us that are fearlessly in searching the defects of character in our life and then totally surrendering it to God to the best of our ability, those of us have a chance to lead happy, joyous, and free lives. Because anyone that's keeping secret defects of character and secret sins and holding them like it's important, and I don't want you to know what's in my inner life, and if I die today, I have to go home and erase stuff off my computer, and I have to tie up my taxes, and I have to make you say nice things about me just in case it's my last day. Anyone that lives like that has a rock that's tied to their back, and they're walking around like this, and they want to make everyone else miserable about them because they're miserable. When the book Dropping the Rock and what 6 and 7 does is dropping the rock is we don't have to live like that. We can leave right here, right now. We can go to my house right now and you guys could walk around if you take your shoes off and there's nothing you're going to find. There's nothing you're going to find. Because I have asked God today on April 3rd to remove those things from me. And when they pop up and they do, I then ask him to remove them again. And when they pop up again and they do, I then ask him to remove them again. And when they pop up again because they do, I then ask him to remove it again. And next week we'll just talk a little bit more about step 7 and we'll go right into step 8. God bless you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'll open the meeting up for anybody who'd like to share. Yes, sir.
I'm John C. I'm not
the Hey, John.
My program, the way I work, I'm fairly certain that this is all stuff that you found in the big book, and that is that the original founders had six steps that had alcoholics hard time swallowing. So it is my personal belief that they put